So, we've talked about respect for mortality, we've talked about generosity, and now we get to the third mindfulness training, respect for limits, or setting boundaries. We've recognized in the first two skillful habits that life is precious, and we've connected to the second and begin to see that it requires us to acknowledge and to also to foster the vital energy so that that precious life can be lived in every moment. And so now we get to this third part that everyone says, I mean, it's sort of not rocket science, everyone says, well, we should set limits so we can do this sort of thing. And yet, what happens is that when we try to set limits, we seem to get overwhelmed. And then we say things to ourselves like, it seems so simple, why can't I? So in keeping with the diverse nature of this retreat, we had a novelist last time. We'll have three economists this time to give us some understanding of why it's so difficult. And they're going to be three, right in an area called behavioral economics. One's going to be Robert Frank, who's going to tell us what the heck is going on. And one is going to be Juliet Schur, who says, look at what's happened to us. And the third is going to be Daniel Kahneman, who says, no wonder. So let's start with Robert Frank. He's written two fairly well-regarded books. One is called The Winner Take All Society, and the third is called, this would be pretty great, Luxury Fever. In the first, what he says is simple. It's that we've come to a point where the sense of what we call success is resonant in one or very few people. And when one is successful, the ability for that success to spread globally means that the rest of us have very little chance for getting that sense of success that we all assume we're striving for, and so we keep spinning. That's just, ultimately, we define success in a particular way that's unattainable, quite honestly, because once we've attained success in some sense, then the next thing that happens is that someone else is there, and therefore we've got to be there, and it's a constant treadmill. The second, Luxury Fever, says there are huge consequences for getting off this treadmill. And so, for instance, if we're not competing, if we're not trying to always be there, then, for instance, we can't live in the neighborhoods where our kids can go to good schools. It doesn't, if we're not dressing the way other people dress, if everybody dressed okay, then it would be okay. But if somebody is wearing that $1,000 dress going to the interview, then the person wearing the $200 dress may not get the chance. And so in some sense, this sense of trying to connect and keeping up with the Joneses, the stuff that we always kick ourselves about, is very hard to ignore because they're real life consequences. And so the message there is we're not greedy, we're just desperate. Okay? We're not greedy. Maybe some of us are. I'm not going to say we're not. We're just desperate. Because the system is set up in such a way that unless we step into it, there are consequences for us and for our children. And so what happens is we're driven to do that over and over again. Now, Juliet, I can't pronounce her name, Juliet Schur, S-C-H-O-R, wrote in 1992 a fairly well-regarded book which says the overworked American, the surprising decline in leisure. Don't think that resonates with anybody. And that decline in leisure, essentially, again, same sort of principles, which is that we are now having to work harder to stay even. So in 1992, and think about now, in 1992, there was an average of 16 hours of leisure a week. for a person in 1992. These days, with multitasking, with a variety of other things going, we have trouble finding 4 hours of leisure. So what it means is that, and those of you who have taken our courses will recognize this, we're constantly upregulated and then blaming ourselves for whatever the reason, because somehow we can't seem to find this levelness that we're said we should be able to expect. That's really, really hard to get your head around, is that it's not your fault, because that's what we do. It's our fault because we can't, if we just set boundaries, said no, did all these things. But what we're recognizing, if you look at nice economists, they never have good news. If we look, but they're honest. You know? But if you look at what's being said, is that the world we live in is set up so that we cannot pause. And if we pause, there are significant consequences. Now, Daniel Kahneman, who, and we have to be proud of this, he is a psychologist who won the Nobel Prize in economics. No psychologist ever won the Nobel Prize. There isn't one. But he won it in economics. Okay? And he wrote this fascinating book recently that details his 50 years of research. It's Thinking Fast and Slow. And so thinking fast is when the system goes into automatic, and you've heard us talk about automatic pilot, and puts us into the primitive brain, which is highly efficient but not necessarily effective. In other words, it's highly reactive, it connects to this moment, and it connects to making this work, but not necessarily have anything to do with the long term. Behavioral economics always talk about our tendency, not delayed gratification. What Daniel Kahneman says is, no wonder. When we're constantly upregulated, we're going to go into system one over and over again, and we're not going to make the decisions that are good for our vital energy. We'll make the efficient decisions, which feel nice at the moment, but are not good for our vital energy. That takes us going into system two, which is thoughtful, contemplative, allows us to really see what's going on. And how many of us can actually do that in the course of a day under pressure? Now, when you go back to Juliet Schur, what she says is that if you look back in those good old days, they really were good. And that there were a variety of things that kept us from running like this. For instance, without electricity, you went to bed when the lights went out. And you got up when they came on. And particularly in some countries, the lights went out earlier and came on later, so you actually got a lot of rest in winter. And so there's a real sense that leisure, which is something that we all need in order to be able to connect with what's going on, that leisure was available to us before we got so smart. Or before we thought we got so smart. And in that leisure time, we had the time to contemplate, we had the time to think, and we had the time to look more clearly at what was going on. We weren't reacting to the moment. The same thing occurs. We live in a rural area, and it's interesting. When we first moved into that area 30 years ago, we would notice that the farm machinery was shut down when the lights shut down. Now, if you drive into those areas, particularly when they're harvesting corn in the late fall, early winter, and after the snow, the farm machinery goes down at 3 in the morning because they have lights. So the farmers, the people that we've indicated, are going to get up in the morning and go to bed at night, and now even staying up longer because their markets are global. Yeah, I don't have to go into it. So, okay, so ultimately, for us to stop and set boundaries is very, very difficult. Okay? So that's the lesson so far. The lesson so far is that the system is set up so for us to do what we say we want to do to be healthy requires a tremendous conscious effort, and it's very hard to do. Okay, just sit with that just for a second. Take away all these judgments you might have had about why can't I do this when I'm not at retreat. How come it's so hard when I'm at home? How come, how come, how come? Now you know. Okay. Now, if you recognize, back in the good old days, about 30 years ago, there were actually programs in place, they were called religious traditions, that allowed us to have time to think. We used to get Sunday off. Can you remember that? And there used to be time to sit together and talk about what was going on. In other words, this used to be easier when we actually allocated the time to connect with what was happening so that we could actually see more clearly what was healthy for us. There was actually time to do it. And if I ask any of you, how much time do you think you have to do this after you leave here? I'm not going to bother to ask, besides that, it's a silent retreat. But just think about it, just for a moment. Think about how you're going to integrate the things that you've been able to do here into the time you have when you walk out this door tomorrow afternoon and arrive back home. This is hard. It is the hardest simple thing you've ever done. Let's talk realistically about setting boundaries. The first thing you recognize is that when it doesn't come easy, when you have difficulty carving it out, no wonder. So we take away the sense that somehow we're not doing it right. And that's an important thing because, interestingly enough, as soon as I get upset with myself for not doing it right, guess what system I go in when Daniel Kahneman? I go into system one. And guess what happens when I go into system one? I can't see clearly. So the first thing we have to do is to begin to connect with the fact this is hard. And when I find myself upset about that, let it be. The next thing we have to do is to be realistic. And we have to be realistic about what it's going to take to have the rest of the world give us the space so we can be engaged effectively in the rest of the world. This is something we're doing not just for ourselves, but because as we can engage in a way that connects differently with the people we're with. So, usually, when you come away from a retreat like this, you're full of great intentions. There's nothing wrong with that. So recognizing how difficult this is, the first thing you do is you set an intention that's manageable. Because in the midst of all of this, when we've had the clarity to see what's possible, we become greedy. There's where the greed is. The greed is not that we have to have so much. The greed is we want so much of this. So what we're now doing is not being greedy, but be connected to the reality of what our life allows us. So you set the intention to do the one thing possible that you know you can do. And so just for a moment right now, without having to say anything or do anything, quietly set that intention. To set a boundary around my life so I can be at peace for some period of time. And just do that. And as you do that, sort through the very first step you're going to take to do that, whatever it may be. Now you may notice it takes some effort to do that. To actually think about that, it takes some effort. because going into system two takes effort, which is why we don't do it very often, which is why it's much easier to stay in system one. It takes effort. So the practice, although it seems simple, is an effortful practice. So also be okay if sometimes you get tired and it's hard to do. But kind of realistic. So now you've set an intention and you've thought of the first simple step. It has to be a simple step. If it's a complex step or a difficult step, truthfully, logically, we know it won't happen. Simple step. The second thing we do, and then again, do this in a quiet way with yourself, is you commit yourself to someone that you're going to do it. It becomes a public expression of deciding to change your life. Because we know that when we make it public, then we become not only responsible, but we become responsible to the community we are building to support us. Because that person you made this commitment to is now part of a community of practice. So you're creating a community, very subversive, aren't we? You're creating a community of people who are going to help you be well. You're not going to do it by yourself. You're not going to sit in that hospital room like I did and didn't have the courage to say I didn't have any courage. You're going to begin to create a community of people who can help, because the system is working against us. It is not supporting us. We have to create a system that will support us. That's what we do. And then you begin to integrate it into the life you have in particular ways. You may not sit for 30 minutes every day, but you now know what wonderful advantages there are just to walking quietly by yourself in a space where you can think clearly. And you plan that in the process. You begin to connect gently with making your day an experience of mindfulness without necessarily having to construct 30 minutes regularly to do it or things like this. When you leave, because you're setting boundaries now, write down, not here, okay? Don't read anything, don't write anything, not here. But when you leave, write down the experience and refer back to it so you don't let it go. The act of writing connects you to system two. It anchors it. It gets you to think about it. You begin to notice it. Because setting boundaries so you can do this is the most important lesson you're going to learn. It's important because it's your life. If you don't honor the vital energy, it will disappear. And if you don't set a boundary and a space to do it, you won't do it. Because it's hard to do. So you've made it something doable. You've committed yourself to someone who's going to assist you. You have written about it so you can connect to it and see it. And then you begin to plan the next time you're going to do something like this. Because this is where you come back and regenerate and you regenerate. And this is how you can actually connect over and over again with a process that keeps you setting the boundary that allows you to be well so that you can be well with others. So just remember, Robert Frank says, no wonder. Look at what you have to deal with and look at the pressures. Schnur says, you don't have time to think about anything because all your leisure's gone. Kahneman says, if you're in system one, you're going to be reactive and there's nothing you can do about it. And so we move back from that. We make sure that the moments you have are moments you can use. So you set up the process so you can. If there is leisure, and there is some, there always is some, It's leisure you're connected to because you're practicing and you're connecting and you know. You're stepping away as best you can from the pressures of day to day because you're seeing more clearly. You're connecting with the reality that is hard work, and so you allow yourself, you value yourself, you say, no wonder. You don't spin into that space that says, why can't I? Because the why can't I's keep us stuck. It's no wonder. So boundaries are set with simple words. No wonder. Boundaries are set by discerning. Let's see what the difference is. And boundaries are set in community. And now we're beginning to form.